are told a college education is the key to economic success, but a new study says it is no guarantee for African-American students. Black college graduates are twice as likely to be unemployed than their white counterparts who have the same education, according to this new study by the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, June 6th. We will talk about the study's findings and the factors that are involved and what we ought to do about this. And we will welcome your questions and your solutions at 1-800-642-1234. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Nancy DiTommaso. I'm sorry, I mispronounced that. DiTommaso, Vice Dean for Faculty and Research at Rutgers Business School, Newark and New Brunswick, and she is the author of the book, The American Non-Dilemma, Racial Inequality Without Racism. She received her MA and her PhD at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Good morning.
Good morning.
So why would black college graduates be twice as likely to be unemployed than white college graduates?
Well, I think that it's important to understand that this ratio between black and white employment, unemployment, underemployment, in fact, has been the situation for a very long time. At least for the last 50 years, the ratio between black and white unemployment has been about 2 to 1. So the findings in this report are not necessarily new, but obviously they're troubling. One of the reasons I believe that that this is the case has to do with the way that whites are able to help each other in terms of the job search, and they do so. And because whites are disproportionately in positions where they have more authority, more decision-making ability, particularly with regard to who gets hired and who gets opportunities, then if blacks are not in those same networks, then they are less likely to have the opportunity to gain access to those jobs.
Yeah, that's interesting. What about just out-and-out discrimination?
Well, as you know from the subtitle of my book, Racial Inequality Without Racism, I think that we have, in fact, given too much attention to the framing of these kinds of issues through racism or discrimination. And the reason that I say that is because, as I argue in my book, because racial inequality gets reproduced more by whites helping other whites than by whites actively discriminating against or having any feelings of hostility toward blacks, that that it creates a very different kind of dynamic where whites don't think that they are doing anything that has any negative impact on blacks. They just think they are being good people, helping their friends or family members. And because of that, they can feel supportive of the civil rights movement. They can even believe in equal opportunity and not realize that the kinds of things that they may be doing in terms of getting their own jobs and helping other people get jobs, in fact, might be reproducing racial inequality. But because they don't see that, they don't think of themselves as racist. They don't have to be racist, essentially, in order to benefit from racial inequality.
Yeah. You commented on the study and the findings, and you said that the findings should not come as a shock to anyone who is willing to face the truth about employment and unemployment in the United States. So what do you mean by face the truth?
Well, face the truth in the sense of, again, that if you are familiar with the employment and unemployment data, then this these findings are very consistent with what we've known for decades. There's a recent book out, in addition to my own, by Kevin Steinbeck and Don Tomaskovic-Devey called Documenting Desegregation. in which they looked at the data from the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission for private sector employers from 1966 through 2005. So that's since the Civil Rights Act was passed. And what they found is that not only have whites maintained their access to the best jobs, but in fact, in some places, they've actually increased their access to those jobs in terms of their representation, over-representation in professional jobs, managerial jobs, craft jobs. So again, these kinds of differences not only exist now in the midst of the most recent economic crisis, but they've been fairly consistent with perhaps some brief fluctuation around that general number for the last 50 years, including since the Civil Rights Act was passed.
Yeah. I guess you think 50 years ago it's one thing, but today in 2014 it should be something else.
Yes, exactly. But from what Steinbeck and Thomas Govic-Devy found, and then from my own research where I looked at individual people and looked at their job histories, it still seems to be the case, again, because we are not focused on how people help each other, then we often don't really understand what's happening that is reproducing these differences and the advantages that whites have. And unfortunately, the consequence of that is often that blacks are not as likely to have access to the jobs that they might want.
Yeah, the study found that even black students who majored in high-demand fields, you know, the science and engineering, fare only slightly better than graduates who earned liberal arts degrees. Is that surprising at all?
Again, not necessarily, because the data that show that there is this white advantage in terms of being overrepresented compared to their proportion in the labor force in any given sector is consistent across all types of jobs. It's consistent across types of industries, types of occupations, areas of the country, generally even age groups. There's some variation over time. But again, because things have been pretty consistent, at least since 1980, if not since the mid-1960s, that whites continue to have access to good jobs, and blacks are not as likely to have the same kind of access. There has been some change. There clearly has been some changes in terms of particularly the public sector, and in some cases in the private sector as well, but whites are still disproportionately overrepresented, particularly in the best jobs, and the greater opportunities that have been available to non-whites and to some extent to white women, have been in jobs that tend to be not as well paid and not necessarily at the same levels of authority. White women have done somewhat better in terms of the changes over time compared to black men or black women or other non-whites, but they still are underrepresented compared to white men in the labor force.
When you mentioned that there has been some improvement in terms of African Americans being employed in the public sectors, what is the public sector doing differently than the private sector?
Well, I think that the key difference is that there's more accountability. There is more, if you will, red tape or bureaucracy or rules about how one has to go about certain kinds of job searches and what kind of accountability and documentation you need. And because of that, I think that there's probably less there's less overrepresentation of whites in those jobs. It's also that whites are probably disproportionately likely to seek jobs in the private sector, and therefore public sector jobs are more available. And to the extent that that has been true in the past, blacks also find jobs when they know someone or when they have the opportunity to be connected. And so there has been, since the passage of the Civil Rights Movement, somewhat of an overrepresentation of blacks in public sector jobs in some sectors, although not necessarily at a great proportion if you look across the spectrum. I'm not as familiar with those numbers, so I, mm-hmm. I'm speaking generally in terms of the patterns in the labor force.
We are talking with Nancy DiTommaso, a vice dean for faculty and research at Rutgers Business School, Newark and New Brunswick, author of The American Non-Dilemma, Racial Inequality Without Racism, talking about this new study that's out showing that African-American college graduates are twice as likely to be unemployed than their white counterparts with the same education. We're talking about why this is, and we'll talk more about what can be done about it. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. A new study out shows African-American college graduates have a higher unemployment rate than non-black college graduates, twice as likely to be unemployed than their white counterparts with the same education. We're talking about why this is and what can be done about it. And we wonder what you think. What's at the root of this problem? What factors do you think might be involved? What do you think would improve the situation? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are talking about this, the findings of this study. Why a college degree is no guarantee. And let's take our first caller, David in Sheboygan. Hi, David.
Hi there. Good morning. I don't know if I have any solutions, but I had one question or comment or viewpoint, I guess. I'm wondering if there was any investigation into some of the soft skills that come along with getting a job. Education is and a degree are one thing, but internships, co-ops, work experience, ability to write resume, articulation, I wonder if some of those skills are maybe not being taught as well as they should be in college, and maybe white students have an advantage coming from somewhere else, maybe just some of the other things other than the piece of paper that says I have a bachelor's in whatever.
Yeah, well, I don't know, Nancy, were these other factors, I don't know if you know if the study involved those other factors.
Well, not in this particular study that I'm aware of. Again, this isn't my study, but it's
right.
One that has come out from this center. However, there are other pieces of research that might speak to that issue. One that is mentioned in this report of a study that was done by Diva Pager, who I believe is maybe currently at Princeton University, where she did what is called an audit study, where they sent out teams of trained people looking for jobs, one white, one black, with identical but fictitious resumes, and then they looked at who was called back with regard to a second interview or job follow-up. And what they found was that whites, even those with criminal records, were more likely to be called back than blacks with high school diplomas and no criminal records. So even when you have people that present themselves very much alike, same kinds of credentials, you still find these kinds of discrepancies. But again, in the research that I've done and what I've been trying to raise when these kinds of issues have been brought up, is to say that you could take that same data, instead of focusing on the discrimination or rejection or exclusion of blacks, you can see that there is an inclusion or acceptance or advantage that goes to the whites. And that difference is very important because discrimination is illegal, but favoritism and helping your friends is not. And also people feel very differently about helping their friends than they would feel if they thought that they were discriminating against someone in doing something that was not legal. Mm. So there's also a political difference in terms of thinking about these dynamics. Is, again, people feel good about helping their friends. They think they're being a good person. They don't think about the consequences of that if somehow other people are being excluded.
Well, so what do you recommend, Nancy, that what needs to be done, any sorts of, I don't know, policy changes or anything that would get to this this favoritism?
Well, I think that there does need to be attention at a policy level, a public policy level. We have had policies in the past, policies such as affirmative action, where there is a need for companies who have not been hiring people in proportions that are reflect the available and qualified workforce to pay attention to the kinds of decision-making so that they're more likely to make decisions that do reflect the available and qualified workforce. But, of course, there has been a constant effort to either undermine or delegitimize those kinds of policies, which, to the extent that they've been used, have tended to be to work. One of the things, even with regard to those kinds of policies, like affirmative action, is that they often are talked about as if it's giving preferences to blacks or other non-whites, but affirmative action policies are really intended to stop giving advantages to whites as opposed to giving preferences to blacks. In other words, that whites are less likely to be overrepresented because of affirmative action policies than they are to be made somehow to be underrepresented.
Yeah.
And then companies could be doing things as well, is that they need to be more attentive to decisions that are being made about who gets hired and who gets opportunities. If they pay attention, again, to the kinds of advantages that people give to each other as opposed to only being focused on discrimination, then I think that would make a difference in terms of the outcomes of decisions. And people themselves need to be cognizant of the kinds of preferences that they give to people who are like themselves. And one way to try to change that kind of dynamic is to have objective criteria set up beforehand, before you try to evaluate the credentials of people who are might be interested in a job. If you allow simply subjective decisions about who's good, who's competent, who's worthy, people will tend to see people who are competent and worthy who are like themselves. So at those three levels, at least, at public policy level, at organizational level, and, of course, at the individual decision-maker level, things could be done differently.
Let's go to Susan in Wauwatosa next. Hello, Susan.
Hi there. One thing that came to mind for me was the role that networking plays in, in finding employment. And, you know, you mentioned family and friends, and that's one way to network, but there are a lot of different networking tools out there now, and they're not easy necessarily. And maybe incorporating concept and skills of how to network would be very valuable. For instance, LinkedIn is, you can really maximize LinkedIn, but you can also just put your name on there and link up with people and not do much, and it doesn't really help you much. But if you know the skills behind how to network better, I'm guessing that would be very valuable.
Nancy?
Well, again, in the research that I did, reporting in my book, I looked at the job histories of the people that I interviewed in different parts of the country. These were all whites between the ages of 25 and 55. And what I found was that 70% of the jobs that people had received over their lifetimes, they had some kind of inside help, whether you call it networking or some kind of connection where either people could give them information they didn't have, use influence on their behalf, or actually offer them an opportunity. And so when you're talking about 70% of jobs have this kind of inside connection, then what does that do if people are not part of those same networks? It obviously can create these kinds of outcomes, such as reported in the study. And so it may be advantageous to suggest to blacks and other non-whites that they should learn how to network. But we start from a situation where we have fairly segregated lives, and again, where whites are disproportionately in positions where they can be helpful to others. And so whites may be willing to help blacks, but for the most part, they don't know them. They don't live with them. They don't go to church with them. They don't go to school with them. And so when opportunities come along, they don't necessarily think about the black person they might know who they should tell about that opportunity. So,
Yeah, let me hold you there, because we do have news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio coming up. And then we will continue to talk about why this study showed that African-American college graduates have a higher unemployment rate than whites, and what we can do to improve that. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about a new study and its findings that a college education is no guarantee for black college graduates to get a job. It found black college graduates are twice as likely to be unemployed than their white counterparts. We're talking about why this is and what can be done about it, and welcoming your input at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking with Nancy DiTommaso. She is Vice Dean for Faculty and Research at Rutgers Business School, Newark and New Brunswick, author of the book The American Non-Dilemma: Racial Inequality Without Racism. She has a Wisconsin connection. She received her master's and her PhD at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Let's go back to the phones. Rayvon in Milwaukee is with us. Hi, Rayvon.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
So, I guess your first caller is questioning, I would call it a bit of a naive question, and that's really what I call the kind of got my crow. So I'm an African-American male. I've got an MBA. I'm a retired from the military. And I can tell you that when I retired and I was looking for employment, one of the issues I had was I just wasn't getting calls back. And it took several months. And I got to the point where I was even wondering, Well, my name is Rayvon. I know I've got good credentials. Maybe it's my name that's stopping me from, you know. So I can say that in the end, I did find employment. I'm employed now. But it did come from networking, you know. I just was one day talking to, you know, everyone that I knew. Hey, I'm looking for employment. I've got these credentials. And it frankly ain't happening. So, you know, what is it? And, again, you know, I think I get what the author's saying, but I still think it's kind of naive to think that, it still doesn't stem from, years and years of having an advantage. But, you know, hey, I'm for getting up and working and pounding the pavement and networking and doing the things you got to do to be successful.
Yeah, Rayvon, I'm curious as to, you said networking eventually helped you get to the job you were looking for. I mean, was there somebody at the company that you knew, or I mean, how did that come about?
Well, it did come about that way. It ended up being someone that I knew, and they were working at a different branch of a company. It's a government job. Yeah. So, but you know, that's what happened. I was like, hey, I'm looking, and I was not even considering a government job at the point. Yeah. At that point, I was looking for something in the private sector. And he said, well, have you ever thought of working here? I was like, no, but if I can get there, I'll go.
Rayvon, was that friend black or white? Because
the friend was black.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So that goes along with what you're telling us, Nancy.
Yes. In fact, most people find jobs through these kinds of connections, despite the Civil Rights Act and mandates against discrimination, and despite equal opportunity policies in many companies. Let me give you an example of the kind of thing that I've been trying to talk about. About a year and a half ago, I was invited to a little conference that a company was sponsoring because they wanted business schools to do a better job of admitting, graduating non-white students, and because they wanted to hire them. They were very committed to the issues of diversity and inclusion. And at this conference, the CEO of this company came to speak, and he talked passionately about his commitment to diversity. And he said that the survival and success of his company depended on having a more diverse middle management because their growth was largely outside the U.S., that people needed to be able to work successfully with people whose names they couldn't pronounce. That's what he said. And yet at dinner that night, I learned from one of the HR managers that this particular company rewarded people if they recommended a friend of theirs who then later got hired by the company. So this CEO and the commitment to diversity was all about trying to get rid of bias, which he meant bias against minorities. But in fact, this company was actively promoting and rewarding people for the bias for friends, acquaintances, and others who were most likely to be like them. And because there's so much attention on this bias against and not much attention at all on how the bias for people who are like the decision makers takes place in terms of company decision making, even this company that was very committed to diversity essentially was not being very effective at accomplishing their own goals.
Yeah, interesting. But Rayvon might have had some trouble because of his name in searching for a job?
Well, there has been some research that has shown that what are thought of as African-American-sounding names, and in some cases even zip codes where there's larger proportions of African-Americans likely to be living, might signal to decision-makers that this particular candidate is African-American. But again, rather than assuming that that means that that person is being excluded or discriminated against, the fact that the person that got hired in the jobs that he might have wanted had white-sounding names, it could be that person was given preference or was assumed to be more competent because of the white-sounding name more than the fact that his is an African-American-sounding name.
So what advice do you have for African-American college graduates who are, you know, hitting the job market right now? And most of, if a lot of the jobs are being gotten because there are, you know, friends recommending or recruiting, I mean, what can a black college graduate do?
Well, the first thing I think that I should emphasize is that getting a college education still pays off for most people. In fact, there's nothing that is more likely to pay off, particularly if you don't start from a position of having a lot of networks and connections and advantages, than getting an education, and particularly a good education. So that's the bottom line. The second thing is that if you are starting from a position where you're not as likely to know people or to be in a position where you have these kinds of connections, then obviously you have to foster them. And that is something that we saw in this particular caller made a difference, but it makes a difference for most people, the way that jobs are obtained these days. And there's been some research to show that for African-Americans, for white women, that if they don't have networks of people who are like them, who can help them, that they can, quote, borrow social capital from white men. And so it does help to become someone who others would want to help, to make friends, to be, you know, to show your capabilities and so on. So all of those things are helpful, and they matter, and they can pay off. It's just, as the study shows, it's not a guarantee. So it's not to be discouraging to say that that there are advantages for some people that work in particular ways in the labor force. It doesn't mean that other people are necessarily going to be unsuccessful. It just means that they need to recognize the situation, not personalize it and feel somehow that it's their fault, but to be persistent and to, I guess, try harder. And that can make a difference.
We are talking about the findings of a new study by the Center for Economic and Policy Research, A College Degree is No Guarantee, about why it is black college graduates are twice as likely to be unemployed than their white counterparts who have the same education. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Nancy DiTommaso. She is a vice dean for faculty and research at Rutgers Business School, Newark and New Brunswick, author of the book, The American Non-Dilemma, Racial Inequality Without Racism. And we are welcoming your thoughts and questions for her about why it is African-American college graduates are twice as likely to be unemployed than their white counterparts. This study, again, not your study, Nancy, but it also found that college-educated blacks are more likely than all others with degrees to be underemployed, working in jobs that don't require a four-year degree. Same thing going on here?
Yes, I would think it's basically the same processes, is that we already start from a relative, segregated lives. Again, whites and blacks typically don't live in the same locations, go to school at the same places, go to church at the same places. And so whites disproportionately hold jobs with higher pay, higher authority, and more training. And because of that, again, if people are primarily helping others who are like themselves, then the kinds of help and the kinds of access that blacks are likely to be able to pass along to other blacks may not be the same kinds of jobs, and therefore you can have this kind of difference in terms of underemployment as well as unemployment.
Well, Jill writes on Facebook, racism is still alive, still prevalent. Ask anyone who lives in an all-white community. I would not have been hired in my community if I had been black, nor would I have been welcome. Any thoughts on that? In a state like Wisconsin, that that there are many communities that are certainly I don't know if they're all white, but predominantly white.
Yeah, I am not saying that racism doesn't exist and that there aren't still disadvantages that exist for blacks and for other non-whites. In fact, I'm saying just the opposite. But I'm turning the attention not to the exclusion or discrimination against blacks, but to the inclusion and advantages that exist for whites. Now, it may seem as if those are really just different sides of the same coin, except, as I mentioned, discrimination is illegal and favoritism or helping your friends is not illegal. And so you don't have the same remedies that are available, and you don't have the same cognitive understanding of what's going on. when you think about it as discrimination versus as favoritism. And I think that that is a very important distinction. The way that I came to think about these issues and the way that I ended up doing the research and writing my book was because I had been teaching courses in diversity in organizations in the business school for a number of years. And what I found year after year when I had these courses, that all of my students were nice, everybody believed in civil rights, nobody discriminated. And then I would say to myself, so if we don't have any racists, then why do we still have racial inequality? And when I meant don't have any racists, meaning, again, all my students were nice, said they believed in civil rights, everyone claimed they didn't discriminate, and so on. So I began to try and think about, well, what is it in the lives of these people that have allowed them to get to where they are in their lives? And then I began focusing in on this issue about how people have helped them, and they've had certain connections, and they've had others who could look out for their interests. And so I began focusing on the issues of advantage instead of discrimination. Now, that doesn't mean that there isn't structural or institutional factors that give advantages to those who already have advantages. And it also doesn't mean that there aren't cultural and cognitive things that are going on that still cause us to associate with an image of white people as someone who's competent and worthy in ways, again, that sort of cause us to give them preference or have biases for them when we're making choices about who's likely to get a job. But I do think it's something that has not been given enough attention. We have so focused on racism and discrimination that we're essentially missing a very important part of the dynamics that are reproducing racial inequality.
Rochelle in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Rochelle.
Hello.
Yes,
hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Hello. Thank you. Hi, I was calling to talk about my experience over the past 2 years. I got my degree about 3 years ago and have been seeking full-time employment since. And it was my master's degree, and it was a really long road, and I finally just secured a position within the last month, and I'm very excited about it. But I think that one of the things that got me there beyond my degree was a whole bunch of volunteer work that I've done over the past year with my neighborhood group as well as with my daughter's school. Both were just really excellent opportunities, and they were with very diverse groups of people. The work was well related to my profession, but I think that the experience of working with a lot of people who were different than me really helped me, and I think that it was really valuable, as you'd said before, to get involved with a lot of people who maybe aren't necessarily like you, and it broadened, you know, my own personal skills, and I think it definitely added to my qualification.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Nancy?
Yeah, I think that that is absolutely correct. When people talk about these issues of networking, which is sometimes called social capital, meaning that you have assets because of the social relationships that you have, they talk about those that are called bonding social capital, people that are like you, and bridging social capital, people who are not like you. And in general, when you do have interactions with or connections with people who are not like you, it tends to broaden your opportunities. It means that you are connected with people who don't have the same information as the ones who live in your own neighborhood or in your own social group. And because of that, it is typically, in the studies that have been done, shown to be advantageous to broaden your networks and to get to know lots of different kinds of people. It also can create skills, as you have suggested, in terms of learning how to work in diverse environments and global environments, and that's always an asset.
Yeah. So what can we do as individuals, especially as whites, to diversify our places of employment and to try to, turn our favoritism to helping friends who may not be white?
Well, I think that the first thing, of course, is to recognize and be salient to us the kinds of decisions that we're making or the judgments that we're making with reference to other people. Calling it to attention, actually, and making it a conscious decision as opposed to an unconscious or implicit one, is one thing that has been shown to, in fact, make a difference. We are less likely to give these kinds of bias for decisions when we are very conscious of the kinds of decisions that we're making. That's one thing. The second thing, of course, is to involve ourselves in groups that are more likely to be diverse, that have people that are not from our own neighborhoods. The more we get out and see that there are other types of people in the world, then those kinds of things can be very helpful in terms of broadening our perspectives and our sense of identification with other people. Again, the decisions that get made are people that we think of as like ourselves, and therefore when we get to know people from more different types of groups, we'll think of more people as being like us on different dimensions. So those are always positive things. But importantly, I think that whites who are concerned about issues of inequality also need to be supportive of public policies that help other people's children in addition to their own.
Alexandra in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, good morning. Thank you for taking me. I would like to say I am white. I came from Poland in 1977 with college education. And I always experienced through the companies. I went to school over here. 5 years I was at school full-time and working full-time. It was always I experienced like because I am not speaking English the way the people that were over here, even I speak 5 other languages, always until the people got to know me, who am I, will put me in the last spot. And it's so discouraging because America is so beautiful because it was built from people from all over different countries.
Yeah, Alexandra, I thank you for calling. We're so short on time. I need to go to our guest for a response to that. She thought maybe there was a language situation going on there, but maybe that's also the she's not exactly like us going on, Nancy?
Yeah, well, I'm sure that that is the case. I've done some research on U.S.-born versus non-U.S.-born people in the labor force. The study that I had done on that regard was particularly around scientists and engineers. And what I found in that particular study was, again, that U.S.-born white men were more likely to be thought of as technically competent and as promotable into management, and immigrants of various sorts were more likely to be thought of as technically competent but not necessarily promotable into management. So there are these same dynamics that go on for those that you know, are not U.S.-born white men or U.S.-born people. You know, so obviously there are additional challenges that need to be addressed there as well.
Well, we'll need to leave it there. Thank you so much for being with us. Nancy D. Tomaso is Vice Dean for Faculty and Research at Rutgers Business School, author of The American Non-Dilemma. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.